Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast He Stutters, She Asks Him, the occasional series of conversations with men who stutter. This can be found directly linked to the blog, Make Room for the Stuttering, and it's also available as a free download on iTunes. Today I have the opportunity to have a chat with somebody that I met on one of the stuttering online forums who seems to be a really interesting guy, and I'm looking forward to getting to know him better. So I want to say hello to Frank. Hey Frank, how's it going?
Good, Pam. Thanks very much for having me on the podcast.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to getting to know you. Could you introduce yourself to us? Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do to keep yourself busy.
Well, my name is Frank Steckel, and I live in central New Jersey. And I've been retired for the last 4 years, and I do a variety of things. I attend coursework. I go to coursework in Manhattan, and I work around my house, and I help my wife with her chores, and I volunteer in my synagogue, and I listen to stuttering podcasts, and I do a variety of things.
Oh, okay. Well, you sound like a really busy guy. What did you retire from?
Well, I used to work for the state of New York for the education department, and I worked for the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency within the education department, which used to be called BESED, Vocational Educational Services for Individuals with Disabilities, which is a hell of a name to say if you stutter. And I worked for the state agency for about 31 years, and I worked in the field of vocational rehabilitation for about 35 years. And I started out as a vocational rehabilitation counselor, working for both our White Plains and Binghamton, New York offices, which for those of you who are not from New York are in upstate New York. And then I worked as a supervisor, working both for our central office and for our Staten Island office, which is part of New York City. And then for the last 5 years of my career, I was the district office manager of our Brooklyn office.
Wow. Very long career. What got you interested in the first place, working with people with disabilities?
Well, when I was 18, my mom worked for a school for people with developmental disabilities in New York City, and I was a junior counselor, and then counselor at the camp that the school ran. So that was my first exposure to working with individuals with disabilities. Then when I started college, I was actually a client of the agency that I later worked for.
Oh, how interesting.
So I became aware of the vocational rehabilitation field actually through that. And then, you know, I sort of must say that going into the field of vocational rehabilitation was really a combination of wanting to work with people with disabilities, especially people who were going to college or were college bound, and also sort of the pragmatic sort of need to want to get a job and not have to go for an advanced graduate degree. I do have a master's degree in vocational rehabilitation counseling, but at the time I didn't want to go for a doctorate, and I wanted to get a job after 2 years as an undergraduate. I lived with my folks, and I wanted to get my own place. And also there was the practical, issue, and I have to be honest about this. I'm now 61 years old. So back in the early to mid 70s, you know, before there was ADA, I was frankly concerned about someone with a stuttering problem getting a job. And I know that's still a concern. But, you know, back then there were no laws protecting individuals with disabilities when it came to finding work. And I felt that working for an agency that in fact tries to help individuals with disabilities to get jobs, you know, they're not going to discriminate against me.
That absolutely makes sense. So are you saying that you consider stuttering to be a disability?
I do. I think it is an impediment to communication. And of course it depends on how significant the stuttering is and how it individually affects a person with their communication. But I feel, at least for me, that it is a disability to the extent that it affects how I communicate. I'm very open about my stuttering. But that doesn't mean it's not a factor when I communicate.
So, what part do you think disables you? Because you're communicating great with me, so
you
sound like a really effective communicator.
Well, you know. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
for that. I think it's less of a factor at this stage in my life. I've had a career where I've had to talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a less, it was a less significant disability disability for the last maybe 15 or so years of my career and in my life, because I'm much more open. But even now, while I like to think that I generally say and do what I want, you know, if I'm going into a store and I can't find an item in the store, I still sort of, to be honest, I still sort of scan what I have to say. And, you know, I say, gee, you know, is this item that I can't find? How, you know, is this something I'm going to be able to say easily or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, it's still a factor. It's still a thing.
Mm-hmm. What was it like when you were working? How did the clients react to your speech? Did it ever interfere?
You know, I don't think it did. There were, you know, a few clients sort of indicated that they feel that I understand their situation because I obviously have because I stutter and I have a disability myself. Most clients certainly did not react to my stuttering. So I don't think it was a significant factor with the overwhelming majority of clients that I worked with.
Mm-hmm. What about colleagues and supervisory staff?
I can't recall it being a real factor. One of the things that I did throughout my career, maybe with the exception of my first job interview, was whenever I was being considered for a job or for a promotion, I was very open about my stuttering, and I invited the interviewer or the interviewing team in some cases to ask me any concerns and be very open and very honest about any concerns they may have about my stuttering. I know on my first job interview, for example, when I was first interviewed for a state job, I brought up my stuttering, and the manager of the office asked me, he said, gee, you know, do you want to make your own call? Because I guess he was aware that maybe some stutterers are concerned about the phone. And, mm-hmm. And again, this was in the early 1970s. And I said, not at all. I make my own calls. Of course, I was always anxious around the phone, so that wasn't you know, completely honest at that point. But I wasn't going to admit to him concerns that I had about the phone. But at least he was able to express his maybe reservations or concerns that I wouldn't be able to handle phone work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being very open about my stuttering, because I'm not a covert stutterer. I have blocks and I have prolongations. I think it really helped me.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it helped as well that the supervisor and the interviewer was coming from, you know, a disability background?
Yes, I do. I definitely feel that was a factor, although I do like to believe that that I functioned well enough in a job interview that even if it was a non-disability-related job, that I would have been considered for the job if I had the skill set to perform the exam.
So what type of work have you done, if any, over the years on your speech? Were you involved in speech therapy?
Yes, I've been involved. Periodically in speech therapy. As a kid, I had speech therapy in school for a while, which wasn't effective, as I think I've heard many people say. I was involved with the Brooklyn College speech clinic when I was younger as well. In my late teens and early 20s, which is going back to the 1960s, the emphasis, at least in certain areas, seemed to switch more to a psychological perspective on stuttering. So instead of working directly on modifying my stuttering, I went to a place that no longer exists in New York called the Speech Rehabilitation Institute. I think it was called that, but I was involved in group psychotherapy at that point, but group psychotherapy with people who stutter. And that I really didn't like that. I have to be honest with you. I've met people actually through support groups in my subsequent life who actually went there. And many of them, well, I've met only a few people, but those that I've met actually felt they were helped, but I did not feel I was helped.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the psychotherapy run by a psychotherapist or a speech therapist?
No, it was run by a psychotherapist. It was run. I had group therapy with a psychologist and with a psychotherapist on two different occasions.
And did they have any experience with stuttering?
They did. They worked with stutterers, but I never got the sense that they really understood stuttering from a mechanical perspective, from a speech perspective. I think they understood the issues that people who stutter go through in terms of anxiety and shame and all of those, issues that we go through, but I don't think they understood the stuttering piece.
Mm-hmm. So, what kind of approach did work for you?
Well, during the 1970s, during the sort of early part of my work career, I went to the Hollins program, the fluency shaping program at Hollins College in Virginia. And that was really the first time that I felt I got some tools to modify my stuttering. Like many people, I went through the program and I was fluent for a while. And then I fell back. I feel it was helpful, not that I achieved the goal of becoming stutter-free, but because I felt I had some tools which gave me the confidence to go into speaking situations like this one. So I feel that I have some degree of control you know, over the stuttering that I have.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the Hollins program, which I never went to, but I'm somewhat familiar from talking to other people about it, that it was fluency shaping, but you mentioned that it was fluency shaping that gave you tools to modify your stuttering. So was it stuttering modification therapy also?
No, it was not. It was most definitely fluency shaping. And if you stuttered, if you were still having blocks, you were doing something wrong.
And how did you feel about that approach? I mean, I've heard some people say that the whole reason that they really didn't care for fluency shaping is that it, you know, has the potential to make the client feel like they failed.
Right, and I think that's true, and I think I did go through that stage of feeling that I failed. But I think what I found was that the tools that that they gave you, even though I wasn't stutter free, it gave me, I think, the tools to still sort of modify my speech. So I sort of used the tools the way I wanted to use them. So I didn't, you know, once I started to slip back, I didn't necessarily say, well, you know, I'm going to forget all of this and I'm not going to have anything. I'm not going to try to work on my speech or modify my speech. I still work on it and I still work on it now.
Mm-hmm. Are you practicing fluency shaping techniques now as we chat?
I'm trying to. I'm trying to have easy onsets, and that's mainly what I'm trying to work on.
Mm-hmm. Now,
right?
Do the easy onsets help you with not blocking?
I think they make the blocks easier so that I don't get into a really hard block.
Mm-hmm.
So that I may have a repetition, but it won't be a hard block.
Mm-hmm. And are you basically okay these days with how you sound and your stuttering in general? Uh-oh, big sigh.
It's such a variable thing, as I'm sure you know. You know, I have good times and I have bad times. It's very hard to explain why sometimes my speech, even, you know, speaking to my wife and speaking to my son, I seem to have more trouble with my speech, and then, you know, other times, very similar circumstance, I'll have much less of a problem. So during those bad times, I work on trying to bring myself out of it, so to speak, by maybe exaggerating my targets somewhat more.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly do you mean by bad times? Is it just the increased physical, mechanical stuttering, or is it the way you feel about it?
No, it's really an increase in the mechanical stuttering. Just speaking, and I'm having a lot of blocking, and it feels exhausting sometimes, and I don't know completely what's going on. And then I really sort of have to take stock. And sometimes I'll try to play with different things. For example, I saw something about airflow on the web, so I've been actually trying to work on that, for example. And sometimes focusing on a different area of my speech will sometimes help, actually, to make me to increase my fluency.
So even now, after being retired from a long career and kind of in your second part of your life, if you will, you still continue to work on your speech, right?
Oh, definitely. I'm still active. I do a lot of volunteer work, and I take a weekly class in modern Hebrew. And
oh, cool.
I still feel I'm a really active guy, and I want to continue to work on my speech, definitely.
Now, when you say that you're taking a class in Hebrew, you mean the language, so you're learning to speak it?
Yes. I attend a class in it's Israeli Hebrew, the same kind of Hebrew they speak in Israel today.
Mm-hmm.
And the class is conducted mainly in Hebrew. And I'm a sort of early advanced student at this point.
Ah, do you... is your stuttering the same when you're speaking Hebrew as it is when you're speaking English?
I think it's largely the same. I tend to block on the same sounds in Hebrew. Some of the sounds in Hebrew, as I've the last few classes that I've had, I tried to give this more thought. The sounds in Hebrew, such as a ch sound, a more guttural kind of sound, or the s sound, I don't stutter on as much. But the p's and the m's and the l sounds, which exist in Hebrew, same as in English, I tend to stutter on. You can't I don't have the vocabulary in Hebrew where I can substitute words. And while I try not to do that in English either, I think unconsciously I do probably, substitute to some extent. So to that extent in Hebrew it may be a little worse. I'm not sure about that though.
Yeah, I think that's just part of the human condition that goes along with stuttering, because I like to think that I don't do that much either, switching words like I used to. But sometimes I find myself on like automatic pilot and
right,
just doing it anyway. Like if I feel like I'm in a particularly higher stakes situation, or if I feel like there's more potential to maybe get a negative reaction, I'll look ahead and see if there's a word that might be easier for me to say. And sometimes I kick myself for doing that afterwards because I hadn't intended to, but I think sometimes that just happens as maybe like a defense mechanism for ourselves.
Right. And then I think it does, as you say, and I think it becomes a second sort of an almost unconscious reaction or a second nature sort of response to stuttering.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately. And that can be as difficult to break free of as some of the other, the core stuttering behaviors that we have. Because I too have a lot of repetitions and prolongations, and it can be just as hard for me to lose that as it is to do the word switching. But that's what makes stuttering so fascinating, right?
Yes, it is, definitely.
What about your family support? What's that been like? You said you have a son. Is it just one son?
Yes, yes. I have one son. Mm-hmm. My family's great. My wife is, she's very supportive when it comes to stuttering. In fact, she asked me whether I want to practice my targets.
Oh, wow.
She's gone to an NSA convention with me, and in fact, we both plan to attend the NSA convention in Florida in July.
Oh, good. Then we'll get a chance to meet.
Right, definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So she's very good, and she gives me a lot of feedback about my stuttering. Also, my son, who's now 20, how old is he? 21. He's now, in fact, in the U.S. Marines, so he's not home. But I think he regards my stuttering as that's just me.
That's just dad.
Yeah, that's just me. And, he's never really reacted to my stuttering. Interestingly, though, I just want to, if I may, just a short, anecdote.
Sure,
with him.
Please.
He's actually a adopted, but when he was maybe 6 or 7 years old, he actually had a friend who was who stuttered some at that point in his life, and my son began showing stuttering behavior, and of course, I said, "Gee, he's not a biological son, and so he doesn't have the inherited genetic potential, at least not for me, to stutter." And but nonetheless, he started stuttering, and we spoke to a speech pathologist at that point, and she said, "Gee, maybe he should come in for an assessment and whatnot." And just at the point we were going to schedule the assessment, he stopped stuttering.
Wow.
And I don't know whether it was imitative behavior from me or the friend that he had who stuttered, but it was very strange, because I thought, gee, here I have a son, and this was a concern that we had if we had a biological child, but he didn't stutter. He doesn't stutter.
Interesting story, and it could indeed have been, wanting, imitating his friend, or wanting to be like dad. I've heard of that as well. Some kids whose parents stutter, and I know parents worry about, having a child who stutters as well. I've heard of some parents talk about their kids imitating them because they want to be like their parents.
Right.
But they're in fact not predisposed to stutter, so you know they quickly outgrow that. Just one last question as we begin to wind down. You've had a long career with stuttering. What would you say has been one of the lessons that you've learned about yourself on this stuttering journey?
I think there were two things that come to mind. One, that stuttering doesn't have to disadvantage or handicap somebody in any way. It really should not disadvantage or handicap someone in their career, in their personal life. But I think somebody who stutters, such as myself, can have a totally satisfactory and productive and wonderful life. All other things being equal. I think the other thing is that I think it's always been important for me to be open about my stuttering. As I said earlier, open, when I had job interviews, when I talked to people, in my synagogue, or talk to other people who I meet, who may comment on or not comment on my stuttering. During my work career, giving presentations, which I occasionally had to do, being open about my stuttering. So I think that's very, very important in terms of, getting over the shame and having to hide it and what happened.
Do you still have shame today?
I don't think so. I think it's taken a lifetime for me to overcome that shame. But I no longer have that shame because I realize that it's something that I really cannot control, that it's not my fault. And it took me a long time to really feel that this was something that was not my fault.
Well, I'm glad that you shared that, because if there's any young people that might listen to this, I sure hope that they get that message quickly in their lives and on their stuttering journey, because it sure could save kids a lot of grief if they realized early on that it's not their fault. It's just
definitely.
It's just something that we were dealt.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Well, Frank, this has been such a great conversation, and I suspect that we really only scratched the surface. But I thank you for being so open and honest. As you said, that's so important, and for going with the flow and, having this conversation without knowing which direction it was going to go. So I really appreciate your sharing with us.
Thank you very much, Pam. It was really wonderful speaking with you and having this experience. Yeah? Thank you.
Yes, thank you again. And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.